Hi, I'm Leslie Kane. I'm editorial director for Medscape's Business of Medicine, and I'm here in Washington with Dr. Donald Berwick, administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Dr. Richard Gilfillan, acting director for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. Now, there's been some big exciting news today, and that is the final rule for accountable care organizations has been issued. Now, you'll remember that back in the spring of 2011, the proposed rule came out. And since then, there's been a lot of feedback and talking to physicians and interested stakeholders, basically getting a sense of what types of changes or modifications or improvements could be made to get more people interested in becoming involved with ACOs. And that work has been done, and the day is here, and there's some significant changes. So let's get right to it. And first, two of the big things that have come out of this are the Medicare Shared Savings Program and the advanced payment model. So Dr. Berwick, if you could just, we'll get into some details in a minute, but give a quick overview of the goals of the Shared Savings Program.
Well, the Medicare Shared Savings Program is part of the Affordable Care Act, right. The law that's helping us now begin to transform and make better health care in America. It's a pretty bold idea. It was the idea that in fee-for-service Medicare, where patients can still go anywhere they want, just in ordinary Medicare patients, their physicians or their primary caregiver can decide to join an accountable care organization. And if they do, then they get support to coordinate care for the patient better, to work better together as a team, to make things seamless, no matter where the patient goes, to share information and really act like a team. And if by coordinating care better, they reduce the cost of care for a patient, they actually share in the savings with the Medicare program. Everybody wins. The Medicare program saves money, the physician or ACO gets rewarded, and quality goes up because you now have more seamless and coordinated care for patients. So the patients and families win also.
Right. Okay, now let me go to look at a couple of the exact details because there are some big changes. One thing is that, and as you recall, there are many elements for sharing in the savings. The number of quality measures has been reduced from 65 to 33, and that's you've also created a longer phase-in time to measure the quality. How significant is that to physicians? Because that's a big difference.
We listened really carefully. There were over 1,200 comments who came in, and we got tremendous feedback from all the stakeholders because we wanted to make sure that we were listening to everybody. And one of the issues was burden, making sure that when the program runs that physicians and other caregivers and hospitals that participate can really get the work done and we're not overburdening them. On the other hand, we have a very serious and important job of protecting beneficiaries because when you share the savings, you might worry, well, are they going to like hold back on my care a little bit, skimp in order to get savings? Well, they can't do that. We're watching quality really, really closely. In the in the proposed rule in March of 2011, we put out 65 metrics saying, what do you think? What do you think of these measures? And we got tremendous feedback on them. Our staffs continued to work, and we settled in on a subset of them, 33 measures, that are really a very robust set of ways to watch quality. And they're phasing in. So in the first year, the payment reward comes if you report the result.
Right.
Thereafter, the second year, all but I think eight of those metrics are taught. You actually, the performance affects your shared savings.
And previously, the performance hit, it came in a little earlier?
Earlier, yes. It came in at the start. So we're phasing them in. So first, you have to report so we know, totally transparent. Second year, for most of the metrics, it's now tied to your possibility of shared savings. In the third year, all the metrics except one are tied to shared savings.
Okay. Now, here's another big one. Previously, 50% of primary care physicians had to be meaningful users for EHRs. And now there's no requirement. So what led to such a large change? And is there a practical minimum that you would expect in order for this to be feasible?
Well, Rick can comment. I expect all of the ACOs that thrive are going to move to an automated electronic patient record, if not immediately, eventually. It's the only way to go in terms of really being able to coordinate care well. Mm-hmm. And the whole administration policy, everything we're doing in CMS with the Office of National Coordinator, is encouraging and eventually rewarding providers for moving to electronic records, and then eventually they get less money if they don't. So that's underway. With this, we didn't really want to add an extra requirement to the ACOs. Mm-hmm. We want them to discover themselves what the best way is to manage information, but they're going to have to modernize, I think, in order to be successful.
Right.
Rick, what
Dr.
do you think
Gefilla?
About
yes, I certainly would agree. And I think we heard loud and clear that people wanted to have a lot of opportunity to find the best way to get into this new space of providing coordinated care for their patients. And we wanted them to have plenty of liberty to make decisions about what were the most important activities they needed to engage in going forward. For some, electronic health records are an absolute given, and they're far down that path, and the 50% would have been no problem. For others, it could have been a real challenge for them given where they are. So we thought we'd let the high-tech rule run its course, let folks get up on that, mm-hmm. and not necessarily embed that as a key part of this program, but really focus this on letting folks find their way mm-hmm. to delivering the seamless coordinated care that we're after.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like they'll have to go with the EHRs because that's the only way to do the reporting that's required.
Well, there are other ways to do it initially, but what we think will happen is that clearly it's easier to do using EHRs. Mm-hmm. EHRs are getting better at collecting the information mm-hmm. as well and reporting it. So there's a kind of a nice evolutionary path that we think that the EHR systems run and that practices will be on. They'll come together very naturally.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, you've also made a change in the risk models. So we say with the one-sided risk model, the provider shares in the upside, and with the two-sided risk model, the provider assumes a risk of potential loss. I understand that was a little bit thorny the first go-around, and can you tell me about some of the changes that made their way into the final rule?
I wouldn't say thorny. It was it's a balancing act because we have duties to everyone. We want to make the program attractive so physicians and other caregivers and hospitals want to join the ACO movement. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure the trust fund is protected so that money returns to the trust fund so we can do more things for beneficiaries and sustain the trust fund over time. So it's a balancing act. We guessed in the proposed rule about how much shared savings would probably be enough to recruit the energies we want. Mm-hmm. As we listened carefully, we realized, well, what's going on is there's a whole spectrum of providers out there. There are people who just want to get into coordinated care, but they don't have much experience with it. We need to make it a little easier for them to get on, and that's why we modified the track one, we call it, from 2 years of shared savings only to a third year of risk. Right now, in the first contract period, in the final rule, there are 3 years of only shared savings. Mm-hmm. In track two, there's a little more risk at the start. There's risk in both directions. And then mm-hmm. Rick has been crafting the Pioneer program in the Innovation Center. You may want to describe that.
Yeah, so we really have three tracks now available for folks. We have the two that Don described, and then we have the Pioneer ACO track, which for folks who are already providing these kinds of services and care for their patients and are used to operating with a model like this, they can move more rapidly mm-hmm. forward. The first year there, they have the opportunity to take risk or not, and they can decide for themselves whether it makes sense. And then in the second and third year, that risk and the reward opportunity escalates. And in the third year, they're actually in a position to start taking what we call population-based payment, taking mm-hmm. the next step down the road to a different payment system to support this new and exciting care system.
Mm. So we are being more generous than in the proposed rule with those first tracks. The more risk you take, the more gain you can have.
Right.
But we're more generous across the board, at least in general, in the first contract period. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is when, according to the Office of the Actuary, who scores this for HHS, the savings are the same as they were virtually in the mm-hmm. predicted to be in the first rule because we made it more attractive. We'll have people in it.
Right. Good. Now, I guess you mentioned this a little bit, but the concern had been raised that in some cases ACOs may be tempted to undertreat or to steer away from some of the sicker patients. But I understand that, are there safeguards in place or how do you prevent that?
Well, every payment system has mm-hmm. hazards. So if we pay you know, fee for service, everything you do, you get paid for, right. the risk is too much being done. Patients get hurt that way. Complications occur. You get drugs or treatments you don't really need mm-hmm. or might not need. So that's a risk. On the other end, when we now are saying, well, you know, if you can figure out how to coordinate care and make it better for patients, so, for example, they get to stay home instead of having to go into the hospital, or mm-hmm. they don't get complications, or there's not, you don't have to repeat things because it's coordinated, that should lower costs. You can share the savings. There the risk is, well, some people who might have other intentions might go for the shared savings by keeping you from getting the care you really need. Mm-hmm. That's where the other side of the coin comes. That's watching. That's measuring, accountability. It's accountable care organizations, accountable to the patient, the mm-hmm. family, and to us. And that is from watching the quality and those metrics that are now in place. And other ways, we will be watching the behaviors of the players are going to vastly reduce the risks of skimping in care or other things that shouldn't be done.
The other thing I'd add, Leslie, is that we're using a survey tool to actually ask patients, how does this new care system feel to you? Are you able to see the doctors you need to see? Are you able to see the hospital? Go to the hospitals you want to go? Is it feeling good? So we'll be able to monitor on a regular, ongoing basis exactly what patients are telling us about how they're feeling in this new care system, and we'll actually be paying that for that service in the first couple of years so that, you know, what we really want the folks who are new to this to really be able to concentrate on redesigning their care, redesigning the experience of care for their patients. And so there's mm-hmm. not the risk is not there initially. We'll be handling the survey for them and giving them that feedback and really allowing them to do what's most important in the early phase of this doing this work, which is figuring out how to really deliver that seamless coordinated care experience right. for people.
So yeah. you'll be getting feedback, and then if patients are sensing that there's some kind of discomfort to them about what's going on, it will be revealed.
It'll be revealed. We can act on it. There are thresholds for sharing the savings at all. You've got to have the quality in order. Mm-hmm. Also, remember, this is in the fee-for-service Medicare system, so one of the really great things about this, from my point of view, is the patients don't lose any choices. If you think something's going on that you don't like, go to another doctor. Mm-hmm. Go ask for a different specialist. You have all the choices you would have in traditional ordinary Medicare. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great bargain for patients. Remember, also because of copayments and other out-of-pocket expenses that occur, when we're able to improve care and that way reduce costs, the patient gets better off financially because mm-hmm. there's less burden for them.
Mm. Now, it's been said that there's a big attitude change required to get providers across the whole spectrum to be working together for team care, and that's a big challenge. Do you see that as a potential issue, and what would you say to groups who are dealing with that, Dr. Gilfillan?
You know, we've been around the country, I think, over the last year, listening to providers, doctors, hospitals, nurses, all over the country. And, you know, the one thing that's clear is they know the country needs them to provide a better care system mm-hmm. and to provide that three-part aim of better care, better health, reduced costs through improvement. They know that they need to do that, and they're excited and looking forward to the opportunity to do it. And I think one of the reasons we got such a strong reaction to the original reg was because people said, gee, this doesn't feel like it's getting me to the point where I can do this. And I think what we're hearing now, and I think what we will hear, is that people are saying, this is what I need to start moving towards that world. And I think they're naturally, again, going to find their way to working together. I mean, there'll be difficulties, and people will think about, you know, doing things the old way. But the reality is most people are excited about the opportunity to meet the challenge that they know the country's face mm-hmm. and that their patients are facing.
And, you know, one of our approaches, Rick and me and our wonderful team, is to try to find out where people are and meet them where they are. I mean, we would like a program in the ACO environment that invites lots of people to join depending on at different levels of maturity. That's why those three tracks are mm-hmm. there. And so we really worked hard to try to make it more attractive for, I might even say, novices mm-hmm. to get into the progress toward affordable, accountable care. Mm-hmm. The other thing to remember is the ACO rule, the Accountable Care Organization, that's only one of what we're now calling a suite of activities, right. all of which invite more work on equality, more learning about coordination, progress for everybody, change for everybody, change mm-hmm. where they are, meeting them where they are. So the bundled payment initiative that Dr. Gilfillan announced a few weeks ago from the Innovation Center, that's a place where you're not ready to take maybe coordination of an entire population, but you'd like to coordinate an episode of care. Well, mm-hmm. then maybe bundled payment's interesting for you. You want to start a medical home. That's interesting for you. That's just a much better primary care environment. So hopefully people are going to find different roads to the same destination, which is seamless, coordinated, high-quality care for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That would be a great accomplishment. Let's talk for a moment about the advanced payment model. And I understand that that came from the Center for Innovation.
Yes.
And I'm guessing, or is it correct that the idea is that money in the pocket is a greater motivator than a hope of future money, that they're getting advanced payment? Or maybe just describe it a little
Well,
bit.
Yeah, again, this came from our team, our ACO team, which is really an integrated team across CMS that's worked together to create this suite of opportunities, really, for ACOs. And so what we heard loud and clear was, one, it's going to cost something to start an ACO.
Right.
People have said, you know, cited different numbers, but clearly there's an expense associated with starting an ACO for folks who aren't there already. So we knew that that was the case. We know that some small physician groups and some rural hospitals don't have the resources necessarily to make that investment themselves. And so what we heard loud and clear was that people were looking for help, looking for some sort of support. So this program is intended to provide some support up front. Some money right at the beginning, and then money on an ongoing basis during the first performance period, so that they can change the way they deliver care, re-engineer care, position themselves to succeed, position themselves on both the quality side and the care coordination side. And then at the end of the first performance period, when they have shared savings, they'll then be in a position to finance their activities going forward and pay us back, in effect. So that's the idea.
Okay.
In effect, we're kind of giving them the anticipated savings up front to invest in them and to help them get started. And then eventually they'll be on a self-sustaining path. Again, if we want to have a broad, inclusive program that gets lots of people involved, because we won't have any shared savings if people aren't engaged.
Right.
And that, at the end of the day, that's what this is about, making sure we get that three-part aim for a large part of the population. So we needed to get folks up and going. We knew there was a component of the system that needed that. And so that's what we did. We put... made an investment in a set of probably 50 practices that would, or 50 physician-based or rural-based ACOs, that will give us the opportunity to evaluate as the Innovation Center whether or not that model adds value, makes it more likely that they'll be successful and brings more people into the program.
Mm-hmm. Now, who is this advanced payment model available to? I understand it's not to everyone.
It's specifically, there are some criteria that we've established that look at basically the size of the physician-based ACO or the size of the rural hospital-based ACO. Looks at that based in, on a number of criteria, including the revenue of the organization, tries to identify those who are most likely to need the support to get going. And it is intended for folks going into either track in the shared savings program. So it's not a separate track. It's really for people who say, I want to do the shared savings program, but I'd like some help in getting started.
Okay. Now, you've noted in this there are three ways to receive payments, correct, and with the advanced payment program?
Well, there are a set of components. You'll be continuing to receive fee-for-service, naturally, as part of you. You know, that as with all of these shared saving models, we'll pay fee-for-service for the services that are provided to folks. Then there is an upfront payment that we'll make based on the size of the ACO that will give them some of the capital needed to get started right in the beginning, make some of the investments in care coordination activities and tools, et cetera. And then there'll be an ongoing payment on a monthly basis for each person that is assigned to that ACO. And they'll get that through the first period. At the end of that, then they'll look at the potential for shared savings and incentive payment based on their performance on the quality and the cost of care measures.
So do these savings planned payment methods operate simultaneously, or is there an advantage of one over the other?
These methodologies I just described for the folks who are in the shared savings program and qualify for the advanced payment program will be made, all be made simultaneously, except the shared savings, which would be done retrospectively at the end of the first performance period.
Okay. Okay. How do specialists fit into, going back to shared savings program, how do specialists fit in?
Well, at least two ways that I can think of. Once an accountable care organization is formed, they're going to be very interested in coordinating care. They're going to be interested in wooing specialists into relationships where care is coordinated, where the patient returns to primary care and home, where the ball isn't dropped. And so I think it's a new world for specialists, or some specialists. They always want to do this, but it makes it easier for them to become more coordinated with the home base for the for the patient. We've also mm-hmm. changed the attribution rule a bit so that the first cut is to see if a beneficiary is using a particular primary care source enough that we can attribute that beneficiary to that, you know, to Dr. Jones, who wants to be in the ACO. Mm-hmm. If not, we take a cut at specialty uses and see if some patterns of specialty use can still allow a patient to enter the ACO environment. So specialists are, they're a little more central to the ACO than they were in the proposed rule.
Mm-hmm. I think it is important to note that the ACO is really bringing together the whole delivery system. So those specialists now have a reason to think real hard about the need to coordinate care with their primary care physicians and with other specialists. It's those kinds of new kind of relationships and dynamics that suddenly make an electronic health record make all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to see what's happening and what different people are doing with patients. So it's that kind of interplay of the dynamics and the relationships that result from a bunch of people coming together and saying, we are going to provide outstanding care and results mm-hmm. for this population of patients. Mm-hmm. And that's why we think we don't need to necessarily be so prescriptive on some elements, because they're going to naturally find their way to the tools and the activities that are going to make them successful.
Mm-hmm. One of the ideas about not being not is too prescriptive is that we don't know what imaginations are going to concoct here.
True.
I think they're going to be very exciting new forms of cooperation and coordination that mm-hmm. we wouldn't have been smart enough to specify. So we're trying to leave quite a bit of breadth here for people to come up and mm-hmm. show the world what they can do.
Right. Well, speaking of care coordination, now you're also talking about home care and post-hospital care, et cetera. So how will some of the technology and ACOs be able to make that happen?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been a rapid development of new ways of caring for folks at home, remote monitoring, mm-hmm. new tools, scales, blood pressure tools, ways of checking your blood thinner at home. And, you know, there hasn't always been a reason for people to think hard about putting those new methodologies in place. Now there's a reason for people to think hard mm-hmm. about how to use those. And as Don said, you know, the limits to what people will dream up are unknown. And, you know, that's the wonderful thing about, well, it's the wonderful thing about America, and it's the wonderful thing about healthcare in America. People will find exciting new ways to do things if they have a good reason to think hard about them, and now they do. So we think that there'll be all sorts of new ways people find to deliver care at home and in other places that today may be primarily in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. What I want beneficiaries to understand is we're with them where I think they want to be. I mean, now with the new incentive systems and the possibilities that exist in the ACO, we can say the beneficiary now, everyone has an incentive mm-hmm. in helping you stay home where you want to be. And now getting into the hospital, which is in general a way for the hospital to make its money, now the tables are turned a little bit, and mm-hmm. now it's everyone's going to be thinking about how can I keep this person healthy and well and where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other thing we're seeing as we go around the country is hospital folks understand that now too,
right.
And they're reaching out and saying, "Okay, we get it. We our activity can't stop within our walls. We're extending out, and of course, we have other programs in place right now." Some as a direct result of the Affordable Care Act, some that we've done through the Innovation Center that encourage and support that. So we have our Partnership for Patients program mm-hmm. where we are looking closely at patient safety and invested about $500 million in patient safety activities for addressing the care that people receive when they're in the hospital. And the other wing of that is the Care Transitions program, where we invest $500 million in supporting the development of new community-based care organizations that provide support to people when they leave the hospital. So what we're seeing is a series of activities that really start centering care around the patient and the patient's needs, not institutions or types mm-hmm. of providers. And we're really starting to see the spread. We'll see the spread of much of that acute care out into the community.
Very
into
good.
Homes.
Now, just to shift gears for a little, for a moment, with the emphasis on ACOs, where would you say that, where do private practices and small practices fit in?
Well, we're going to keep working to find ways for them to do what they want to do, which is be part of a more coordinated environment. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurship out there, but people don't want to be lonely. They want to know their patients can be cared for. So we've tried to make accommodations in the ACO rule for combinations of rural providers to get together and offer services under the ACO model. Rural health centers can sponsor ACOs. We found a way to do that in the final rule. And Dr. Fillon's and the Innovation Center is finding ways to reach out to help rural providers find other ways, non-ACO ways, mm-hmm. to coordinate better. We'd like everybody in the seamless care world.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the advanced payment program is intended to go right at supporting
those
providers. So, again, we're not going to prescribe the ultimate structure of a healthcare system. Mm-hmm. We're trying to meet people where they are, give them support, and then let the evolution of healthcare take the path that makes the most sense in the eyes of the people who are closest to patients.
Okay. And one thing, now every change comes with a challenge. And what would you say to some of our readers who are maybe not quite convinced that this is the way to go?
Well, they can stand back a little bit. Not everybody has to get in. We're going to support the people that really want to get into this new world and prove that it can work. We're going to learn as we go, and there'll be room for everybody eventually. I hope some of those who are a little scared will look at some of the options we've given them with Track 1 and the Shared Savings Program. Mm-hmm. If they're not ready for that, bundled payment or medical home project, there's going to be room for everyone to kind of feel their way into this in a way that'll be, it'll be change, some mm-hmm. discomfort, but possible, I hope, for everybody.
Okay. And any last words, just to wrap up here, is there any point that we haven't touched on, any final point you'd like to make?
I'd like to just return to the patient. I mean, this is about patient-centered care. That's what we're really talking about, people and families and patients who want to have health and well-being and seamlessness. Nobody wants to be in a hospital bed or taking mm-hmm. a med they don't need. They want health, and we want to orient healthcare now more and more to the production of well-being. That's what we're after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing I'd say is, you know, this is about a return also to the roots and the original reasons why people went into healthcare. This is about it, and it's about taking care of patients and finding the best ways to take care of patients. And in some ways, over the years, we've you know, the system we created kind of took us away from that a little bit, and we all got focused perhaps in other aspects and other motivations and says, we think this brings us right back to why we went into healthcare, which is to do good things for people who need us at the toughest times in their lives. And so that's the exciting part of that. And I think that's why there's so much excitement in the country around the work that we're doing in CMS and that other private payers are doing. And we intend to work with them, work with providers to try and kind of get us back to that notion of why we all started in healthcare to begin with, which is to take good care of people.
Okay, that's great. Okay, I would like to thank Dr. Berwick and Dr. Gilfillan for being here today. I think they've given us some terrific insights into the significant changes that have come with the final rule for ACOs. And they've also told us about some of the nuts and bolts that will really be significant in making this a success. I'm Leslie Kane from Medscape. Thank you for joining us today.